Well, you just heard the news. Very likely, forecasters maintain that Hurricane Gustav will hit Louisiana at some point during the night, sometime during this show, very likely, with its early devastating effect. Officials pleaded with Gulf Coast residents to flee all weekend. And news reports have said 95%, 95 to 98% have already left. And because of the near certainties of the storm, Republicans said they'll abbreviate the opening day of their national convention and create a mood of sobriety and charity in lieu of the Republican National Convention, which is supposed to start tomorrow. Now, the French Quarter is a ghost town, but that's no surprise. Even when there are people everywhere in New Orleans' French Quarter, it has this eerie spectral feeling, layers of dank, fetid, Creole-spiced history. Still, I can't imagine what it would be like to be walking in the French Quarter tonight, like so many reporters are, waiting for Hurricane Gustav. Or what it would be like to be the Louisiana delegation to the RNC, walking around the warm, breezy streets of St. Paul tonight, while the state that they love and the people they left behind are in harm's way. And then there is the flooding and the tornadoes that will likely be byproducts of such a well-fed, warm water air mass. And even when the Gulf Coast is out of the woods tonight, tomorrow, sometime, it will still be looking for high ground with the water, with the rain, and possibly with the flooding that is to come. We will be doing our show tonight on Coast to Coast AM. As usual, we have a terrific guest that will take your mind off the storm if you're in its path. But if you've been left behind, or if you intentionally stayed behind, if you're going to wait this one out anywhere along the Gulf Coast and you need a friend, we've got a number. We're setting aside the international line tonight at 1-800-893-0903. Throughout the evening, the international line reserved only for people who are in harm's way of Hurricane Gustav. So keep that number in mind, 1-800-893-0903. At this point, I don't know that there's anything we can do for you, but at least we can be with you as the winds increase and the early evidence of the hurricane's power intensifies. We'll take your call as long as you can get one out. And we'll do that even during the course of our interview, which I'm really looking forward to with Roland Haas. He has an amazing story to tell. His secret life as a CIA assassin. It's a true story. It's one that you'll never forget. And it's one that does not come without its complications for him. We'll talk more about that, about how he really is two different people as a result of the time that he spent entering into the past tense. More on that later. Watching the skies tonight yourself, don't miss the amazing story of a piece of the sky that was missing in Florida the other night, and other crypto news as we get the show started next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. Some of our affiliates along the Gulf Coast may not be carrying this program tonight in light, of what's happening. And instead, they may be going to local news coverage, but maybe not. And wherever you are hearing us, if you are in the path of Hurricane Gustav, again, the phone number to call is 1-800-893-0903. If you're riding it out, we'll ride it out shotgun with you on Coast to Coast AM throughout the evening. So, other than that, we'll open up the rest of the lines here for open lines. And we'll do open lines until the top of the hour. Next hour, this, I swear, it's one of the most fascinating books I have read in a long time. It's all true. Roland Haas will be here to talk about why he isn't bragging when he says he entered into the past tense that he was a CIA assassin. And it was a secret life, and he was recruited right out of college to do it, and he gets into all the details. I mean, he's completely laying it out there. This isn't some ambiguous story, which you know, he's hoping no one's going to call him on. He's just laying it out there. This is his truth, and in a way, this book is his therapy for what he has done and what he's willing to confess to now. You'll hear about it coming up next hour on Coast to Coast AM. Take a look at the Coast to Coast AM website for more on this thought-provoking testimony. It starts like this. I tend to notice the skies all the time, but in my 46 years, I have never seen anything like this. All clouds and haze abruptly broke off at the edges of this huge wedge of blue sky that were completely missing inside of it. It was absolutely surreal. The story is told. My family and I were leaving a restaurant at about an hour before sunset, maybe around 7:30, and we just stood in the parking lot for quite a while, gazing at this hole in the sky and trying to understand what could possibly cause such an effect. My boys expected Dad to explain this like everything else, but this was completely unexplainable. I'll take a look at the rest of that story, coasttocoastam.com. There's a report tonight out of Sacramento that another dad might have explained something entirely different to his son, that he was the Zodiac Killer. CBS 13 is reporting the Zodiac Killer attacked at least 8 people, terrorizing the Bay Area and taunting police in the 60s and 70s. Thursday, the FBI confirmed to CBS 13 that they are now running laboratory tests on some items that may link a suspect to the killer. The evidence was given to the FBI by a Pollock Pines man who also claims that he recently found the disguise worn by the Zodiac Killer during one of his attacks. Quote, the identity of the Zodiac Killer is Jack Terrence. He's my stepfather, says Dennis Kaufman. 8 years of Dennis Kaufman's life has been consumed with attempting to prove the only father he's known since he was 5 years old is none other than the Zodiac Killer. This is a handwriting comparison I did, Kaufman said, showing handwriting samples claiming to be his father's and the Zodiac Killer's, which bear a striking similarity. Kaufman says it's no coincidence. The composite is a dead ringer, says Kaufman, showing composite sketch of the killer next to his stepfather's photo, a resemblance that is undeniable between pictures of Jack Terrence and descriptions of the Zodiac. Kaufman also claims his stepfather in a taped phone conversation indirectly admitted to being the Zodiac Killer. Jack Terrence died in 2006. Kaufman claims that while going through his stepfather's belongings, there were disturbing findings, including a knife still covered with what could possibly be dried blood, some leftover film undeveloped that's been handed over to the FBI. Other rolls that were developed included numerous gruesome images that appeared to be people who were murdered, he explained. And just recently, Kaufman found something that may unmask the Zodiac Killer. It was a black hood with a Zodiac on it, Kaufman explains. It's similar to the hood worn during an early attack, which is the possible key evidence connecting the stepfather to the killings. He also believes there are dozens of more victims which were never linked to the Zodiac, including Kaufman's own mother, who he claims was suffocated. So great work, and so nice to see the FBI stepping up to the plate for the family of the would-be Zodiac killer. But why won't the FBI do that with the family of the man we believe was D.B. Cooper? The FBI has had fingerprints of William Gossett for weeks, but still no confirmation or denial that the suspect found through this show is the most creative hijacker in U.S. history. Goes to show you, though, you just never know about some people. Bill Gossett was a law-abiding, tax-paying family man who was in the service, teaching, and even serving the community later as a priest. But he had a criminal secret that no one would have guessed. If it's true, same thing with this man being identified as the Zodiac Killer, and you might be shocked to learn Roald Dahl, one of the most famous children's book writers of all time, had a secret too. There's an article in the Independent UK that says the author of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and James and the Giant Peach and so many other children's books became a very different kind of guy when he was younger as a British spy in America. That he was an undercover agent attached to the British Embassy in Washington, and he bedded every famous, wealthy woman in the country that he could find. Roald Dahl, as a super secret spy in the United States, took to bed Millicent Rogers, the glamorous heiress to the Standard Oil fortune, and Claire Booth Luce, the oftentimes ultra-right conservative congresswoman and the sexually frisky wife of the publisher of Time magazine. Roald Dahl would later complain to friends that Claire Booth Luce, of all people, 13 years his senior, had left him saddle sore after three nights in a hotel. Claire Booth Luce, who knew? Who knew she was spelling her last name wrong? The same thing goes with the author of Enter the Past Tense, Roland Haas, next hour. Nobody knew he was a CIA assassin, and he was hiding in plain sight. Goes to show you, you can't always trust what you see. Which reminds me of that story at fizorg.com. The advantage of using two eyes to see the world around us has long been solely associated with our capacity to see in 3D. Now a new study from a scientist at Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute has uncovered a truly eye-opening advantage to binocular vision, the vision of humans, an ability to see through things. More on that if you go to my blog. How cool is that? We all have the potential for X-ray vision. Dang it. I knew I wasted my money on those X-ray specs I ordered from the back of Boys Life magazine. How weird is it going to be if we all have X-ray vision, though? And if we all have it, so what? That was supposed to be my superpower over the super foxes of the 1970s. Real foxes, though, real flying foxes anyway, might have an odd superpower of their own, though. Scientists are investigating whether flying foxes are involuntarily reacting to the loss of habitat in Queensland, Australia, by spreading deadly viruses, including Hendra. A horse veterinarian died from the Hendra virus earlier this month. Five other horses were destroyed after an outbreak at a veterinary clinic. Researchers are looking into a rising number of flying fox-related viral outbreaks in other parts of the world, including the deadly Ebola virus in Africa, the SARS epidemic in southern China. Maybe they're all related to flying foxes. There is an emerging theory that the animals' immune systems are reacting to human interference. Some people even propose that it's like a biological weapon to protect their ecological niche. Only when humans try to destroy that balance that the virus jumps out and attacks the general population. A virus that just jumps out when the species is threatened by humans. Is that like right out of science fiction or what? How many space movies were predicated on the belief that aliens on some distant planet were just fine until we showed up and disrupted the local ecosystem? To the immune system of a population of flying foxes, we are the virus that must be repelled. We are a bacteria on their owie. Hendra is their bactine to get rid of us. Oh, that's so freaky weird. Of course, the same thing could be said about hurricanes. They don't have brains. They don't have a will. They are, to me, hurricanes, a giant single-cell organism that just can't help itself from killing. That's what makes them truly terrifying to me. As a human, I depend on my reason. Hurricanes cannot be reasoned with. They have no interest in bargains. To me, hurricanes are like Frankenstein's monster. When he tossed that little girl in the lake because he ran out of flowers to float. Remember that scene? Except that the little girl didn't float and she drowned, and he just moved on without another thought. And Gustav is like that to me. He's big and almost supernaturally strong and doesn't mean any harm, but cannot stop himself from killing either. And the monster is on the loose, and our best chance for survival will be respecting that raw power and not get caught playing patty cake with it on the shoreline. Now, that having been said, if that's where you are and you're watching out for good stuff, remember, we're reserving this line, the international line, for you to check in. 1-800-893-0903. We'll be in open lines for a while. And coming up after the top of the hour, we'll get to our guest, but still keep that line open just to keep you company as you keep a watch on Hurricane Gustav. Kennedy is in Eagle Point, Oregon, to get us started for open lines on Coast to Coast AM. Kennedy?
Hi. What my story tonight, it's about a friend. It's actually a friend of mine's.
I'm listening. Hello? Yeah.
And what happened was his nephew died, got shot, and everyone said it was suicide, but a couple people weren't satisfied with that. They said that his grandfather had murdered him. And about 3 weeks later, he was sitting in his room, and he looked up from whatever he was doing, and he saw his nephew sitting there.
Who looked up?
My friend, the one.
Okay. Just want to make sure, sir.
Yeah, sorry about that. And they started talking, and about an hour later, they sat there for about an hour talking. And right before he disappeared, the nephew said, "Beware." Didn't say anything else, just said, "Beware." And then, so, you know, he was kind of scared, but he didn't really think that much about it. And so that night, he was asleep, and he woke up in the middle of the night for no reason. And he saw his grandfather in his room with a gun. And then just his grandfather left the room, but he was really scared. And he's not sure what had actually happened.
What do you think happened?
I think that his grandfather was guilty of the murder, and he was going to kill anybody who was friends with that person because he was mad at that person.
What did he do with that information?
He didn't actually do anything with it. He didn't really, I mean, he told a couple of people, but they didn't, you know, they laughed at him and stuff. They didn't.
If we learn anything from the story, and you can link up to it at coasttocoastam.com about the Zodiac Killer, the true identity of the Zodiac Killer, it seems to me the lesson from that is to notify the police and let them scoff at you. Let them laugh. Once you've notified police, once you've made your argument, once you've told them that, then it's a different story. But, gosh, that's a compelling story, and I just think that somebody ought to be looking into that. Damon is in Sacramento on Coast to Coast AM. Damon?
Hello, Ian.
Hello.
Hello. Obama is the Antichrist.
Obama is the Antichrist?
Yes.
Okay.
The reason he's the Antichrist is because the hurricane is heading to New Orleans again.
Okay. How do those two things tie in together?
I read that in the Bible not too long ago.
Okay, well, that's not in the Bible, so let's not even pretend that's in the Bible. But what is it? How do you tie those two things together? How is it hurricane in the coming to New Orleans and Obama being the Antichrist?
Well, Obama is very sneaky, and doesn't tell the whole truth. So, and because of that, God is punishing us because he's the Antichrist.
All righty. Thank you, Damon, for checking in from Sacramento, west of the Rockies. Patrick is in Seal Beach, California, on Coast to Coast AM. Patrick?
Yes, Ian.
Good evening.
Good evening. I studied ufology for about 20 years. I got like a bottom line treatise on the whole thing. But crop circles, marking what dimension they're in. Pyramids. In order, if you want to go to another parallel universe, you have to use a pyramid. And Illuminati control the planet. They killed one-fourth of our rock and roll stars, most of the Kennedys.
Jose, just so I understand, you're saying the Illuminati killed one-fourth of our rock and roll stars? Which ones?
John Denver, Ricky Nelson, Elvis Presley, Data Music Guide, River Phoenix, Andy Gibb.
What would the Illuminati have against Andy Gibb? I was with you up to Andy Gibb.
It's human nature to reduce the glory factor, and the way they reduce the glory factor is to kill people.
Yeah.
Jim Croce is another one. It's endless. Aliyah attempted to kill alien ant farm in Europe. Attempted to kill Barbara Madrilla in a car crash. Did kill her band in a plane crash. Leonard Skinnerd twice, and he survived the plane crash. Now he's trying to make a comeback. He's found dead in a drug overdose in his bed.
Who's that?
That was the lead singer of Leonard Skinnerd.
Okay. He died in the plane crash. Right? The original lead singer did. They're both of them. Very interesting. Thank you, Patrick. Well, there you go. Open lines. Where are you going to take us in the time we have between now and the top of the hour? And Roland Haas takes us undercover as a CIA assassin. His true life story coming up on Coast to Coast AM. And we're just going to do the rest of this hour for open lines. And then Roland Haas is coming up. You know, he said something in the introduction to the book that just kind of stuck with me. He said he sort of has to pretend that he's the same person at the beginning of the story as he is at the end. The guy that's writing the book is the same kid that he's writing about who was originally recruited out of college to enter into a super secret program, which, by the way, is not unverifiable. And he'll talk about that and the proof that he brings to his claims in the book, Enter the Past Tense. But it's his struggle, that dichotomy, that duality of the good and evil that exists in the world that is also within himself, that also makes this story very compelling. I mean, you know, he'll tell you how and who and how many people he killed as a CIA assassin. But that's only part of the story. It is not without its perspective or regret. And we'll talk about that coming up throughout the show, too. It's amazing material. And the fact that somebody really lived this, instead of just being some sort of, you know, B-movie in Hollywood, will make it all the more memorable tonight. And while you are riding out the storm somewhere, remember that phone number we've set aside for the international line for anybody that's in the path of Hurricane Gustav. We're just saving it for you. So it doesn't have to be now. And as soon as you start to see maybe some of the evidence of the hurricane coming at you, if you are in some place that you want to talk about what you're experiencing, we'll keep that line open for you all night long on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. We'll get to all those open lines coming up in just a second, but as promised, we just want to hear from some folks that are along the path of Hurricane Gustav, which is driving kind of right up the middle. Looks like a 7-10 split in Louisiana, and Blair is in Youngsville, Louisiana. Whereabouts is that, Blair?
We are about 5 miles south or so of Lafayette, which is about 55 miles west of Baton Rouge.
Yeah, looks like it's heading right toward you, what I'm seeing right now. I mean, literally, like, right at you, isn't it?
Yep, it is.
Now, why are you still there?
I've ridden out every storm since Andrew. I moved to Lafayette originally in about 1987 with my family. We've ridden out every storm. This one's no different.
Well, is it a pride thing that makes you stay?
It's mainly a want to stay home, want to make sure that we can get started right away on the property damage control. There are instances where people will come knocking at doors. Like during Andrew, I remember people would come knocking at doors posing as yard help now, which is a little weird having it happen just 2 days after the storm. So it's
right.
Mainly also to protect our home fronts.
I understand. Now, what are you seeing from the storm from where you're sitting right now in Youngsville, Louisiana?
About the last 5-6 hours, the wind's been picking up a little bit more. I'm looking outside my back door right now. I have a little tree in my backyard, and it's kind of windy. I'd say the winds are about, you know, kicking up a few miles per hour, and it's been raining on and off all day.
Where are you in relationship to the coast?
We are about 15 miles north of the coast.
Okay, so not much concern for you with the storm surge itself, with the higher tidal waves.
Not much, but you can never tell what you're going to get.
Okay, and so for you, it'll just be rain and local flooding and wind.
Rain, local flooding, wind. We'll probably be without power for a few days once it hits.
Have local police enforced a curfew for Youngsville as well?
No, Lafayette Parish, which we're a part of, will have a curfew starting tomorrow, I believe about 6 p.m., and will be lifted about 6 a.m. Tuesday morning.
New Orleans is already in the middle of a dusk to dawn arrest on site curfew. Unless you're a journalist, apparently, unless you got a camera and a live truck in front of you, they're pretty much arresting everybody. Blair, I want to just put you on hold for a second so that Gina can get your number so that we can check back with you later on during the show and just make sure you're okay. Thank you so much for checking in with us. East of the Rockies, Bonnie is in Tennessee on Coast to Coast AM. Go Vols, Bonnie.
Ian, go Vols. I want to say, first of all, you're not talking to a well woman, and it's been a long time since we spoke. Years.
Well, I'm glad to have you back then.
Thank you, sir, and it's good to talk to you. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Last night, I was fascinated. I hope you're happy. I didn't sleep at all. And I watched the whole thing. Now, I took a nap today because I can't wait to hear tonight.
Good. I think it's going to be a great show.
Oh, sounds fabulous. My question, and I'm not online yet, but I will be joining the 21st century here fairly soon.
Sure.
I didn't hear from the time I started till 4 or 5 or whenever you went off Eastern time, the discussion, any comment that he made, the author whose name escapes me.
Roger Kamenetz, for people that weren't listening, The History of Last Night's Dream was the book.
Right. The History of Last Night's Dream. He did mention something about medication altering it, but I never heard anything specifically about SSRI / antidepressant / psychotropic drugs, which so many of us, my being a case in point of being bipolar,
right?
Cymbalta, Seroquel, a few other things. I was just wondering, did I miss any of that, or did he address that at all?
Well, he did it there. He did in a general sense, and I'll tell you, I mean, for people who weren't listening, I thought it was really enjoyable, too. He's a professor, actually, at Louisiana State University, and he stayed in New Orleans for us and then left after the show was over for safety in Florida. He talked a little bit about, in context of dream interpretation, about drugs in the same way that he talked about food, in the same way he talked about anything, that any way you look at it, what comes out, regardless of how it might be affected by body chemistry, things that are going on within us, that what comes out is worthy of discussion, that you can't just toss out a dream because you had a pizza that night, that even with the pizza right. And I think that was kind of the theme every time it came up. He just said everything, every dream in that context has a value, and you don't dismiss a dream just because it might have been. So he doesn't look at it in terms of compromised by drugs, just influenced by drugs.
I see. I also thought it was interesting, and I know you were trying to limit, and I will try to wrap up real quick. I know you were trying to limit the people that were calling in with so many unusual, strange dreams.
Right.
And then yours as well. Where is the guilt coming from? And I'm thinking to myself, if ever there was a man that probably should have no guilt, it would be Ian Punnett.
Well, so obviously, I
happen to be somewhat prejudiced on that point. And my dreams, personally, since I've spoken to you, you know, my father had Alzheimer's and was on oxygen. He passed in 2004. 6 months later, my husband, who was a lieutenant colonel, was killed. And one of the reasons tonight's guest I'm so excited about is you're talking about recruiting. Well, in Obnoxville, as Lewis Gizzard called it.
Right.
I was recruited by Sheraton Hotels, and my husband was military and his dad was the Pentagon, and I had a top secret clearance.
How about that?
Yeah, it was real interesting, and I was at Langley when a lot of things were going on. So God bless.
Good luck. Thank you.
And our hearts and prayers, having been with Florida Power and Light with my dad after he retired, my heart, thoughts and prayers, and I think everyone should be keeping good thoughts.
Right.
Because if it hits at a Cat 4,
right,
more than flooding.
Even a Cat 2 with just the wrong amount of storm surge is going to be a problem. Bonnie, thanks for that thought. You know, it's so interesting. I mean, she touched on something there, and I'll go back to it. If you didn't hear it, you know, by all means, I mean, StreamLink is such a handy thing to have. And last night, I guess we would probably call it DreamLink. I was pretty forthcoming about this weird dream I had because I woke up so grateful that it was a dream. And Roger's take on it was very different. And how it gets explained in the end, I'm open to. I don't know about guilt, about whether it's a dream about guilt. I certainly don't have any shame. I mean, I sort of felt like I had no secrets, so I did share it. For the rest of the day, I've been kind of walking around going, I can't believe I told that story on the air. Bob is in Los Angeles on Coast to Coast AM. Bob?
Hi. I've had an idea that's been kind of haunting me, and I thought maybe you'd be the proper place to get it off my chest.
Go for it.
Okay. Basically, we've got a real problem with 30% imported oil.
Okay.
How can we change this? And I know darn good well we're not going to do it by increasing the air pressure on our tires. I mean, that's good, but it's not going to do the job. I think the problem has got to be in transportation, and it's not mass transportation. We like our cars. We like to be able to get in our cars, go where we want to go, stop the car, get back in the car, and go home. Now, if we can do the same thing, only better, with some kind of transportation system, hey, we're there. Now, here's the idea. Rather than trying to dig underground or rip up the world trying to put in a maglev train or something like that, which is $7 or $8 billion a mile, why not use existing right-of-way? All the roads we have already spent a fortune clearing out, simply build a canopy over the roads, put solar cells on top of the canopy, put underneath the canopy small maglevs and individual pods that go virtually to any house. It's close enough that you can walk or get in the bike and go to it. You can get in the pod, go where you want to go, go to work, go to play, go wherever you want to go, get out of it. And when you come back, ideally the pods will be waiting for you rather than you waiting for the pods.
Now, wouldn't that only work, though, on, like, a major highway?
No. As a matter of fact, the major highways are every road that goes into the house is a road that you can put this over.
Well, that's an interesting idea.
Because you're not stopping.
Sure.
You can do, and it's maglev, you can do 300 miles an hour through the neighborhood.
No, that sounds like fun right there. Well, I'll tell you what, you know, I think that's a really compelling idea. And I if you're looking for my endorsement, you got it. And I sort of look forward to seeing where some idea like that could go. I think you kind of almost have to get that to a university or to a professor who's working on new transportation ideas and propose it to the students and see if they can't, you know, make one even just around campus or something just to test out the feasibility of it. But way cool. Tim's also in L.A. on Coast to Coast AM. Open lines. Tim, where are you going to take us?
Hello, Pastor Punnett, the night watchman. How you doing?
I'm well. Thank you.
Great. Well, the reason why I'm calling is because I wanted to check up on Bill Burke. Remember, he was saying that Barack Obama was not a U.S. citizen.
Right.
I have a problem with that.
Well,
with that comment, because there are four members of Congress who have a lot of integrity, and you know that's Juan Paul, Tom Tancredo, Dennis Kucinich, and Independent Bernie Sanders. And if Barack Obama was a naturalized U.S. citizen, one of them four would have said something. So, you know, from my conclusion, either Bill Burke is lying in order to push his book, or he was lied to and poor guy's really gullible.
Well, you know, I think he was very sincere, and I think he believed, you know, he has his angle on it. And he's, went to his website, obamacrimes.com. He's asking for donations. And he obviously didn't make any headway in getting an injunction against his nomination.
Right.
So the last thing I saw on there is that now they're wondering what will happen if he is successful in proving his point and Obama has to be removed as the Democratic Party nominee.
But,
so that's where he stands.
You know, like I mentioned, those four men from Congress.
Right. No, I get
now,
it.
They've not said anything. Wouldn't they be violating the Constitution? Thus, they'd be impeached too.
Your point is well taken. Your point is well taken. In fact, many people made a similar point in emails I had received that there's a lot of people who took oaths with him that then would be implicated, and maybe that's evidence. Some people who were for what Philip Berg was trying to do were saying that's evidence of a conspiracy, that there's a lot of folks who are invested in Barack Obama not being called on this, and so they will fight, you know, to prevent this lawsuit from going forward by using back channel nefarious means. And other people say, look, you know, like he's taken an oath. All these other folks have taken oaths, you know, with him, for him, swearing by him that you know, there's obviously nothing to it on that basis alone. We'll continue to track the story. It's not resolved yet, and you'll hear about it here on Coast to Coast AM. Mary, West Coast, west of the Rockies, first time caller line. Mary?
Hello there. Hello there.
Hi. It's open lines.
Say, I want to tell you that I am really pleased that you're interviewing and entertaining this author this evening. And I really am ready to believe everything he says, because I knew a fellow when I was in my mid-40s and 50s. He actually was my gigolo. And he was talking about being a CIA agent or an assassin. And he talked about these fantastic stories of being in the temple in Vietnam prior to the war. He and his team escaped from the temple and went through China. The explosive guy who was able to blow up anything, it stole bars of gold, and then they couldn't carry them, and he found out that they'd been stolen, and he made him bury them, because I guess the chief assassin is the chief of the team.
Now, can I go back to what you're saying about a gigolo? I'm just sort of distracted by it. You say he was my gigolo. What exactly do you mean by that?
And he was very attractive. He said he was recruited out of college. He was a star football player and was...
Yeah, okay. But how is he your gigolo? Did you pay him?
No,
He was just a younger man who was paying you attention.
Well, actually, he was my age, and paying me attention. And
what's the difference between a gigolo and a boyfriend?
Good grief! They have no income, and so you create one for them. I bought a business and put him to work.
He was a kept man, is what you're saying.
Well, that's definition of gigolo, isn't it?
I don't know. I've never had one. I don't know. So very good. Well, I think you'll enjoy the show tonight. I know enjoyed your phone call. Running out of time here for open lines, Mary. We'll leave it there with John in Washington on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Hi. Yes, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about symbology behind what happened at the Democratic Convention and the Greek setting and the Masonic implications. And how that they went from the valley up to the Mile High Stadium. You see, in the days of old Greece, that's exactly what they did when they went to symbolically go to Mount Olympus in order to worship their false gods. And then you climb the steps to the round place and you offer yourself up as a sacrifice. And that leaves the door open for the gods to select who they want to run the nation. And I find it really amusing that the Republicans are now at the Xcel Energy Convention Hall, and we have this hurricane bearing down on the Gulf Coast. And okay. I would like to say you can test the spirit by watching what happens to this hurricane, because it is under the control of God, because God is attacking the soul of the nation by attacking, by making this go where it's going.
Okay. And, Why does God keep attacking the people of New Orleans?
It's because of the things that go on in New Orleans with everything that stands against the word of God, from voodoo.
It's a more decadent city than, say, yeah, New York or Los Angeles or San Francisco?
Well, it is when it comes to the soul of the nation, because okay, it's a soul city. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I guess I spent too much time in New Orleans. I'd have to disagree. I don't know how much time you spent there, but I like New Orleans soul. Maybe that says more about me, but I happen to find New Orleans a wonderful place with terrific people in it. I don't think of it as the soft white underbelly of the United States, but I don't study symbology like that, but I will take that into advisement. Let's go ahead and get to our guest coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett.